Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state announced 62 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases yesterday. The Department of Health and Social Services says the cases confirmed as of midnight Saturday were in 15 communities, including 27 in Anchorage, 7 each in Fairbanks and North Pole, and 1 apiece in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, Kotzebue, Utqiagvik, and the Yukon-Koyukuk census area. That follows 200 new COVID cases and 2 deaths reported Friday and Saturday. The fatalities were both Anchorage women, one in her 40s and the other in her 80s. They were the 43rd and 44th Alaskans to die of the virus. The DHSS says, based on Alaska's average daily case rate for the past 14 days, the statewide alert level is high. The superintendent of Fairbanks Area Schools has announced she will retire in June. Karen Gaborik has worked for the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District for more than 20 years and has been the superintendent of schools since 2017. School Board President Wendy Dominique said Gaborik intended to make the announcement at this week's school board meeting.
We're trying to keep the secret until Tuesday, but of course she had to put it in the agenda. And once she put it in the agenda, everybody started calling and asking if it was true and all that. Yep. It was a shocker to me. I just thought she was going to be here for at least another 2 years, especially with the pandemic.
Dominique says the announcement coming now gives the school board time to do a comprehensive search and public review for a new superintendent. State environmental regulators anticipate that the Fairbanks North Pole area's air quality will meet a federal fine particulate pollution standard sooner than previously expected. Cindy Heil, a program manager with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, says modeling included in proposed amendments to a Serious State Implementation Plan, or SIP, use more recent air quality data.
By modeling the new monitoring data and all the emission inventories, all those control measures that we put in place in the Serious SIP, we're projecting attainment by 2024.
Heil says modeling with the most recent certified air quality data shows the area coming in at about 30 micrograms per cubic meter below the federal standard of 35 in 2024. She says modeling with the previously available data calculated that wouldn't happen until 2029. Heil cautions that achieving attainment by 2024 hinges on adherence to all control measures in the Serious SIP.
We have to fully implement the Serious SIP and continue to do the control measures that are coming up because we took credit for those, and that's how we're showing attainment.
Heil says that includes a requirement that only dry cordwood be sold in the area beginning next fall and a switch the following year to cleaner burning number one heating oil. Among other proposed changes in the amended Serious SIP is elimination of stack-mounted electrostatic precipitator, or ESP, emissions control devices as means to getting a waiver during burn bans.
We don't feel that ESP should be incentivized at this point because of creosote buildup, extreme creosote buildup concerns.
Heil says it's unclear why ESPs, which are highly effective in some other locations, were found to accumulate creosote in local area testing. The amendments to the SIP are out for public comment through October 29th, and an online public meeting is scheduled for October 15th. The amended plan is due for submission to the Federal Environmental Protection Agency by year's end. Oral arguments were heard Friday in a Washington, D.C. appeals court in a federal lawsuit over tribal CARES Act funding. As KNBA's Trip Krause reports, the case is about whether Alaska Native corporations are eligible for CARES Act money.
Attorney Riaz Kanchi represents the lower 48 tribes and others that sued. He says the definition of eligibility within the CARES Act excludes Alaska Native corporations from qualifying for the money. He used the 1975 law called the Indian Self-Determination and Education Act, or ISDEA, to support his argument. Essentially, he says, that law allowed Alaska Native corporations to operate as tribal governments, but he argued that it's not the same as being a tribal government.
ISDEA was meant to support, foster tribal self-determination.
The appeals debate hinged on whether the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which largely formed the Alaska Native Regional and Village Corporations we know today, recognized the corporations as tribes or tribal governments. Attorney Adam Jed represents the federal government in the appeals process. He argues that both ANCSA and the Self-Determination Act allow for Alaska Native corporations to be eligible for the federal funding.
The federal government is recognizing or acknowledging their sovereign status, and that what comes with that is both forming a government-to-government relationship and also having this kind of obligation to provide special services to them.
In July, a federal judge ruled against the Lower 48 tribes, but issued a temporary injunction which prevented Alaska Native corporations from receiving the tribal set-aside. That injunction paved the way for the tribes to appeal the decision. In Anchorage, I'm Trip Krause.
The economic impact of this summer's pandemic-weakened summer visitor season has tourism-dependent businesses and communities assessing their losses. As KiwiSea's Tim Ellis reports, the financial hit has been especially painful in the Denali Borough.
Among the dozens of businesses outside of Denali National Park and Preserve is the Husky Homestead. General Manager Carrie Skinner says it's a popular tourist attraction that gives visitors a chance to learn about sled dogs up close and personal, starting with little fuzzy husky pups.
Guests come and get to hold a puppy when they arrive. And then the first portion of our presentation is about the Alaskan Husky sled dog. We share with people how we name them, train them, raise them.
Skinner says the Husky Homestead had its best season ever last year with more than 21,000 customers. But this season, that number fell to just over 1,000, a drop off of some 95%.
We never could have seen COVID coming and what kind of impact it was going to have on the travel industry worldwide. I mean, it's pretty much decimated it.
Skinner also serves as the Denali Chamber of Commerce's board president, and she says the downturn's been hard on both tourism businesses and those that depend on the economic activity the industry generates. She says most of this summer's missing tourists were those who would have come to the national park in buses or trains as part of package tours offered by cruise companies.
We are heavily dependent on visitors who are coming up on the cruise ships.
Borough Mayor Clay Walker says the drop-off in tourism has in turn reduced revenues that the industry usually generates for the borough government. He says to help ease the pain, the borough's distributed $730,000 in federal grants to local businesses that have been feeling the pinch.
It was a really rough year. A lot of businesses didn't open. Some of those who did wish they hadn't. Others who did open actually said it was worthwhile.
Walker says business persons who opened their doors this season muddled through, partly by adjusting their expectations early in the season. He says the fact that they faced much less competition this year also helped.
You know, I spoke with several in restaurants and even a rafting company who said that their season was actually decent based on lower expectations and the fact that there weren't many others open.
Walker says that ability to adapt to changing circumstances is essential to conducting business this year and next, when he hopes a vaccine will be available and the concern over COVID hopefully begins to recede. He says, for example, businesses should be flexible to accommodate changes that might include booking fewer tourists at a time.
I do think people will be traveling in smaller groups potentially, especially next summer, and looking for smaller group activities. And I think businesses that can respond to that and provide those opportunities may be poised for success.
Skinner agrees the tourism business and many other industries all will have to adapt and adjust to the new normal that may or may not eventually return to what we all used to consider normal.
I've heard from a few people who are like, it may take a while, but we're going to return to normal. And then there's a few that are like, well, we need to realize that that may take a while and that this may now be our new normal, at least for a time period.
Skinner says regardless of whether the new normal persists into the coming year, she's pretty sure there'll always be a strong demand among visitors to hold a little fuzzy husky pup. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
And I'm Dan Bross.